Accomplishment Coaching is proud to present the following fine programming. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach. AccomplishmentCoaching.com.
Welcome to The Coaching Show with your host, Master Certified Coach Christopher McCollum.
Thank you, Dick Warren, and thank you, dear listener, for joining us again. My name is Christopher McAuliffe, Master Certified Coach, here as I am all the time these days with Alex Terranova, Professional Certified Coach. Alex, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I had a, I wanted to do that thing where you say, I have nothing to complain about, but I actually had a client yesterday who said, I have nothing to complain about, and I wish I did. And I was like, wait, why do we even use this? So I'm great. I am just great.
Well, that's... Then there's nothing to talk about, I guess. Okay, good. It's great.
I mean, there's always plenty to talk about. What about you? What's happening?
Well, first of all, I'm still in the impact of your mustache. Is that something I'm going to have to get used to?
You know, I don't think it's going to stick around forever. I think you know, that thing that I feel like your wife probably says this to you a lot. It's a phase. She hopes you're going to move through it.
No, she's never. Well, to be fair, we don't talk that much. Okay. So you're, your mustache, if you haven't, people who are listening to the podcast, the person who's listening to the podcast, you should go and check one of the clips out and then vote on this mustache, because I just can't.
I have a family event this weekend, and so my family is all gonna get to be with it, and I think that's what I'm like waiting for, is that experience.
You know how there's Movember? There's also a great day for everybody shaving unwanted facial hair, which is St. Patrick's Day.
Really?
Well, it's tomorrow, so I thought it was a convenient.
I was like, I thought maybe I have to dye it green, but then that's
oh please,
a whole new set of problems.
All right. Well, speaking of problems, what else is happening in the world? We got the world can be overwhelming at times, and you know, there's a lot to be thankful for at the same time. I know that you're going through some transition. You're getting ready for the girlfriend to move in, right? This is a big move. Any cold feet, any last moment, like renegotiations, anything happening there?
No, you know, you have known me for 7 or 8 years now. So you have seen me in, this is the third, I would say third serious relationship. And there's been, it feels like a third time's a charm. Let's say that. it feels very different. I'm super present. I'm reading a book, I think it's like a Harville Hendricks book on relationships. And what I notice is not only am I learning things that I'm getting to like put into practice right away, but that we're already practicing a lot of those things. And that's something that it's completely new for me. The way we communicate, the way we listen, the way we quickly, you know, apologize when somebody shares an upset or something. I think the most challenging thing is actually being with somebody who has a lot of emotions and is willing to share them and practicing, like, I actually want that from them, you know, and they don't need to tamp it down. I just actually have to shift my uneasiness with it. That's probably been the most challenging thing.
I relate completely. And if you're like me, God help you. But if you are, you then it stirs emotions in you. And I don't know if what I like least, other people's emotions or my own, right? Like, oh, now I've got resonant emotions. I'm going to have to deal with my own emotions. Let's just forget about all that and go to a game.
They feel like, for me, emotions feel like cardio. You don't really want to do it, but you know that if you do, you're so much better in the long run. That's right. And so, and again, right, like it's, oh, I could do 20 minutes, but really you should shoot for like 40. So it's like staying in like twice as long as you want to. And I think I get to often reflect that back to her when we're in a good place, is all I will share with her, hey, I know sometimes this is tough for me, but I actually really appreciate it, because I do, you know, I'm so committed to growth that having to be with this challenging stuff, like
I need the workout. Yeah.
I actually love it. I love it. But in the moment, I know that it doesn't always feel like that to her, because it's a lot harder for me.
Yeah. Well, it's great talking to you, and congratulations and good luck. And, you know, if you need a couch, I got one.
Thanks. So
excited to get to our guest today. Is there anything else you wanted to share with the class before we do that?
I don't have anything, but is there anything you want to share? You know, you like to deflect over here, but you know, you're the master certified coach.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I feel I'm pretty overwhelmed with things. You may have noticed I started to talk about the state of the world and I was like, nope, not going there. Too many emotions and, you know, unresolved issues and stuff. So I think that it's perfect who we've invited to be our guest today, because I'm certainly not the only one who's, you know, both dealing with or feeling a lot of overwhelm and overwhelm of emotion, and at the same time trying to fend it off and pretend it's not there. La 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 la. Our guest, Brandon Smith, is a leading expert in leadership communication and a curer of workplace dysfunction, known as a workplace therapist. But what caught me was his new book, The Hot Sauce Principle: How to Live and Lead in a World Where Everything is Urgent All of the Time. I can totally relate to that. How about you, Alex?
It's something I've been actually trying to get away from. So I'm really excited to have this conversation, because it feels like the opposite direction of, it seems like where I came from and now where I'm headed the other way.
Exactly. He's a TEDx speaker and author, award-winning business school instructor, has been featured on the Wall Street Journal, Fast Company, CNN, and others. We're delighted to welcome to our microphone, Brandon Smith. Hello.
Christopher, Alex, really glad to be here. I really wanted to chime in your conversation earlier, but I thought I would give you guys some space. But you were all talking about emotions, and I thought I could jump in here, but I didn't.
There's the therapist, knowing when to participate and when to lean back and let us do our own work.
Wait, do you want to tell us what you were going to chime in? We didn't shut you down there. We were go for it.
Well, you know, I love emotions because they're data, they're sources of data. You know, they give you, to use kind of our hot sauce analogy, they're kind of the spiciness, they add that flavor. So I can say, you know, I'm having a good day or a bad day. But if I say I'm having a great day or I'm having a horrible day, you know, it adds flavor to it. And as a good mentor of mine shared with me years ago, you know, when emotions are raw around something, it always tells us the waters are deep. So when you react strongly to something emotionally, it should be a great cue for you to ask yourself, huh, that's interesting. I wonder why I'm having that reaction. And use that as a way to explore triggers, patterns. We all carry them. We all carry our own baggage and triggers and patterns. But as we're talking about leadership, you know, it's that movement from the self-awareness to self-management. And so emotions are great cues for that. So I love emotions. And another kind of a good emotional tip in this, whenever we react with an anger, you know, we're kind of an angry reaction. Anger is a defense mechanism. It always is defending something vulnerable underneath. So somebody's touched something soft for us and we don't like it, so we armor up. And that's where anger cues in. So when you got an angry emotion, you know, it's a good reminder, somebody's touched something soft there. So it's cues for us to do a little more self-exploration. So that's what I would have said, Alex.
I want to follow this up because I don't want Christopher to touch that piece about touching something soft. So I had an experience recently in my relationship where I said to her, it feels like sometimes you like dump your emotions on me irresponsibly. Hmm. And like, you're not taking responsibility for them. You just kind of drop them on me and then I'm forced to be or deal with them. And that got created more emotions. And we talked about it. And then she came back and she was like, you know, I could really see something there about, you weren't telling me not to bring my emotions. It was to kind of like do a little work with them if possible before you just kind of drop them in my lap.
Right.
I'm curious from your perspective, is there something to that? Was I kind of on to something, or was I just deflecting to not have to deal with it?
No, you were probably onto something. I think the way that you phrased it might have created a little defensiveness because you used the word you. Well, you do this thing, right? And so if we want to change that approach to something not creating defensive, we might say, here's how I'm experiencing this. I'm curious if you're experiencing the same thing. So we're stating it more as a matter of fact kind of event. And then you could even soften it even more and say, maybe it's just me, but I've just noticed, you know, when we're together, and I'm so glad you feel safe enough to share your emotional journey with me, but sometimes it feels overwhelming to me. And I'm curious if it feels that way to you, or if it feels more comfortable for you. What's your experience of this? So that might be another way, because it sounds like you're going to have more of those conversations in the future, Alex.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's her, one of her biggest things is fear that somebody can't be with all the emotion that she can bring.
Yeah. So as a mentor years ago shared with me, that's called a love test. So I'm going to put that out there. I'm going to keep testing you.
Yeah.
It's like people who are afraid of abandonment. They're going to, you know, push you over the edge to see if you abandon them. And so we have those little events. And so you just being aware of that, and having some conversation about it might be helpful. Now, I'm trying to recall them the best I can, but if you know the Gottman Institute, which studies, John Gottman mm-hmm. studies relationships, he's got his famous four horsemen. And so let me see if on the spot I can remember them. We want to avoid these. These are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, really, really nasty horsemen in personal relationships. And to a segue into even our conversation here today, I worked with a leadership team last year that was the most unhealthy leadership team I've ever worked with. And they were actively writing these four horsemen to every single meeting. So it's not just about personal relationships, but the four horsemen, if I can remember them correctly, are defensiveness, stonewalling, criticism, and the worst is resentment. That's like rolling your eyes at somebody while they're talking.
I just want to say, no, they're not. And how dare you?
Well, I'm not going to say anything in response. I'm just going to look at you.
Okay. I'm just playing. Please continue.
That'll be my stonewalling. I think it's also good to keep aware of, because when there are relationships in our life that we really want to nurture and keep healthy, whether it's a significant other at home, a business partner, a colleague, avoid those four horsemen, right? We don't want to be critical. We don't want to be resentful, stonewall, or act defensively. Those only start the path down to other conversations, which are not as fun or healthy.
And I love that we can apply that to, that you're applying it to teams as well as relationships, because I think we can all relate to it in some sort of one-on-one relationship, family member, you know, loved one, beloved one. But the notion, I mean, when I think of this, you know, I got a communication already today, early morning my time, about a meeting I had yesterday where somebody left feeling resentful or developed resentment afterwards and is communicating it with me. So this is really useful, because when, I don't know about y'all, but when I get a communication about I did something wrong, you know, all that's there is, but you don't understand, this was my intention and here's where I was going and here's what I heard you say. And what I'm hearing you say is that's just more of it. That's the defensiveness, and that's going to keep the cycle going. And what there is to do is to really acknowledge and support the other person's experience.
So I'll give you a great tip. Think of it this way. Have you ever heard of the martial arts form Aikido?
Sure. Where you use the other person's energy.
Yes. Right? Yes, Christopher. This is corporate Aikido. So don't attack. Don't be like, well, here's what I was trying to do. No, that's a defense. No, redirect. Go with the energy. Tell me more about that. Sounds like that was a tough meeting for you. I'd love to hear more. What did you experience? And then as they're talking, acknowledge it. I can see why you felt that way. I can totally see where you're coming from. What could I clarify for you? But you're going with it. You're not resisting it. And so what you'll see is it will naturally wane as that energy kind of runs its course. But if we push against it, then the person says, I don't think they understood what I was feeling. I need to turn the volume up on that. And so it's like, if you've ever told somebody, you need to calm down. When in the history of humankind has that ever worked? They say, oh, really? Really? I need to calm. You don't know wild yet. I'm going to really turn it up. So using that kind of approach can help to kind of pull the person next to you. I heard someone once describe it to me. She said, you know, when I give performance reviews, so often you sit across the table from somebody. Well, that's so adversarial. She said, I love to pull my seat right next to them and then look at the review together. So we're on the same side. We're going together. So it's the same kind of idea. Aikido, use that when you've got someone with a strong emotion. It will help you come alongside them rather than oppose them.
Already, I'm delighted that you're here. It's already making a huge difference in my week.
That, That's all I've got, Christopher. I'm glad we were able to get there. That's it. I used up all my stuff in the first 5 minutes. I got nothing else.
You lie, mister. You are full of lots of useful information and perspective. Alex, do you want to get into this piece about urgency? Because I know that, at least me these days, everything feels urgent. Everybody's kind of relating to things as urgent. And I spend about half my communications apologizing for the delay and having gotten back to someone. Is that something that you're experiencing?
No, that is not my experience. I used to feel like that, not only when I was in the hospitality business, but even when I started my coaching business. Like, it never got to be turned off, right? The faucet just was on. Sometimes the sink was overflowing, and sometimes, you know, you created a good flow. But I actually have been so much embracing, you know, having had a coach and done a lot of work around discipline and commitment and focus, and I want to say, like, very masculine qualities, I have turned them in, like, wait, I want to actually lean into the more feminine qualities, which have you not, you know, if masculinity is a straight line, I think feminine energy is more of a circle or a squiggly line. Mm-hmm. So urgency to me falls into that masculine go, 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 A to Z, get results, do, do, do. Not a lot of trust, not a lot of surrender, not a lot of leaning back. So no, I feel the complete opposite. But I'm really curious, Brandon, why do we really need to be more urgent? Wasn't COVID here to teach us to slow down?
So my book is titled The Hot Sauce Principle. And the whole idea is, when you think of urgency, from now on, I want you to think of hot sauce.
I love hot sauce.
I do too. So I'm holding a real big, for listeners, I'm holding a big bottle of Tabasco, like a big bottle. And Tabasco, I think, is pretty spicy. And why I love hot sauce is, when you put it on food, it creates focus. It makes it a priority. It really brings out certain flavors and spices, which is great. But if everything coming out of one's leadership kitchen is covered in hot sauce, right? The appetizer is covered in hot sauce. The salad is just drowning in hot sauce. The steak is overflowing with hot sauce. The brownie is just swimming in hot sauce. And I happen to live in the southeastern part of the United States, so we'd say the sweet tea is nothing but hot sauce. Then if you're like me, you're going to be curled up in a ball, overwhelmed, and nothing's going to have any flavor. And so that's why I think it's an important concept, because by itself, used in the right doses, this is really good. It's a motivator. But if you do what most Fortune 500 companies do, and most leaders, is they just go, wow, we're behind, everything's urgent, and they just cover everything in hot sauce and creates mass confusion, chaos, and ultimately burnout. And of course, the leaders get frustrated because they say, well, I created urgency. Why didn't it work? Because you've covered everything coming out of the kitchen in hot sauce. So I think that's a good starting place for us, is that hot sauce using the right doses can be a motivator. Urgency can be a motivator. But if you do too much of it, it can be a real challenge.
I like that. I am definitely one who puts hot sauce on everything. So I think I missed the, I'm like, wait, am I, no, am I doing it? Am I being urgent about everything?
Should I not be putting this in my
speech? So how do we decipher then, right? Because hot sauce in this metaphor is very, like, you know, I like hot sauce on, I can put hot sauce on almost anything. And no, I don't use it on everything, but it can go. But urgency, do we want to apply that to? I can think of a few situations that might not be, you know, appropriate to speak of, where urgency might not be appropriate.
So here's where I love our conversation, where we started, because I think it's going to be a theme throughout our entire time together. So let's talk about the emotion that urgency actually is. So when we think about urgency, and I might say, how do you feel? Okay, I'm just going to put you two on the spot. So Christopher, Alex, when you feel urgency, tell me about that feeling. What do you feel? What does it feel when you've got this urgent thing in your chest? What word would you use to describe urgency as a feeling?
Breathless, terror.
Oh, terror. Breathless, terror. Oh, that's good. It's good. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's really good. Yeah, Alex, how about you?
I think panic. And panic. I think, yeah. The feeling is actually heat and like rapid vibration.
Beautiful. It's a high energy emotion. It's in our chest. It's a vibrating thing in our chest, right? it's the clinical bucket is anxiety. It's actually anxiety is what you're feeling, which makes sense when you think about what you just described. Those are all symptoms of anxiety. And so when we talk about this and leaders are using urgency, what they need to be aware of is they are infusing anxiety into the system. They're giving it a big dose or a big syringe of anxiety. And there's a time and place for that. So if we talk about John Cotter, if you're familiar with John Cotter, he's one of the famous change gurus in the world, wrote books like Leading Change, Heart of Change, researched on change management, Harvard for decades. He's got an 8-step model to change. And the first step is you have to create a high enough sense of urgency. You've got to create that compelling reason, that burning platform. Otherwise, people aren't going to change. It's the same thing when you go to the doctor's office, right? If they say, you know, at some point you should probably watch your diet. You're like, okay, all right, doc, thanks. Appreciate that. See you next year. And then you go, you know, hit whatever your favorite restaurant is after that. But if the doctor says to you, hey, look, if you don't really make some serious changes to your diet, you're going to get type 2 diabetes. And actually, you may only have about a year to live. Wow, that's a little different conversation, right? So now he's injected a little more urgency to the situation. So used in the right cases, it really can motivate and stimulate change. And what organization right now isn't undergoing some kind of transformation, change initiatives, right? Or they've got like 5 or 6 of them running right now. And so that's where I think it's an interesting dynamic that as leaders, we have to be really careful because more is not necessarily better. So I don't know, Alex, if that kind of answers your question, but that's another way to think of it is it's anxiety. Oh, and one more important thing, using the right doses, it stimulates action. So if you've ever woken up in the middle of the night thinking about work, right? There's obviously lots of unhealthy ways we can deal with that. When I often ask that question to groups, they go, well, I grab a bottle of scotch. You probably could grab a bottle of scotch if you wanted to. But other folks will say, well, I grab a pad of paper next to me and I write down the things that I want to work on the next morning. Or you just get up and work, right? You just get up and get it done. Send those emails out so it's not kicking around in your head, right? So using the right doses, it can stimulate action. We just have to be careful that we're using it in the right doses. That's the whole challenge for us as leaders today, because we have such a tendency to make everything urgent all the time. And that's just no wonder why there's so many, not only adults, but children on anxiety meds.
Yes.
I mean, this is not by accident, folks. Like this is a pervasive, there's, I love hot sauce, but I think we're overusing this right now in our society.
Well, it's so great that I think about what you're just speaking about now, this notion of we're infusing anxiety when we bring urgency, or when we're talking about the Gottman Institute, I'm glad that you brought up kids, because I can't help but think about life as a parent, right? So as a parent, I'm dealing with, I had no idea how much of my parenting would be saying the same things over and over and over, you know, sit up, hold over, I thought might be like a couple of months. It's been 10 years, sit up, hold over, right? And so many things, right? Don't forget the thing, don't forget the thing, don't forget the thing. Where's the thing? I forgot the thing. How come if urgency is infusing anxiety, how come it's not working?
So are we talking about parenting in particular, or are we talking about
It's where I went. I'm happy to, you know, if that's not something you want to talk about, we can switch it.
No, we can absolutely talk about parenting. So there's a little different dynamic parenting for the reasons you mentioned, Christopher. First, it's not like in the workplace where, you know, you can kind of set a value in the culture and, you know, actions and behaviors. And most people, you know, step up to that right away. With kiddos, it's 5 years of saying the same thing over and over and over again. And as parents, we often infuse urgency into the things we say to try and get our kids to hear it. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it becomes a family punchline. So I'll give you a great example. I am not a fan of other drivers in the parking lot. If you watch other drivers in a parking lot, they rarely are paying attention to people walking, and people walking coming out of stores are rarely paying attention to drivers. And the whole time I'm still sitting here thinking, these people are putting their lives in the hands of someone who's on their phone. Like, not good. So I always told my kids, you've got to make eye contact with other drivers in a parking lot. If you're walking into Target or wherever you happen to be going, because you never know, they're probably not going to be paying attention to you. Of course, my kids just get out of the car and they're running around the parking lot. So finally, I would have to say to them, I'd say, do you see that car? That car will end you. Okay. So that's me adding a big old dose of hot sauce to that. Okay. My daughter's my oldest. She's 20. I've got a 17-year-old son and a 15-year-old son. They still don't pay attention to cars in the parking lot. But they love to say, Noah will say, hey, Aaron, do you know if you don't turn in that assignment to your teacher, you know what she's going to do, right? She's going to end you. So it's now become a punchline. So I think it's a good, that extends into workplaces too. If we go overboard, then it becomes ludicrous and people don't believe us, right? If we don't make these changes now, our company's going to be, we're going to fail and be collapsed in 6 months. It can feel extreme. So I think there's also something about that, but kiddos tend to look for the chinks in the armor a little more closely than perhaps employees do, and that's partly what we do in families. So it's a little different dynamic, but I wanted to give that example.
I appreciate it, and I think it's universally applicable, right? We all want to create urgency in our kids in certain things, but I also appreciate your point earlier, because I can see that, like, anything, they're not the only ones looking for the chink in the armor. Anything that works, I'll hang on to. So if it worked on Thursday to yell to get them to, I don't know, clean the room or something, now I'm going to yell on Friday, Saturday, Sunday about anything else because I found something that worked, and then it stopped working, right? And then we're like, okay, what will? Threats, bribes, you know, shame, blame, I don't know, something.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing is applied to the workplace. If you got a positive reaction by yelling in that meeting, well, you might just learn, hey, all I got to do is raise my voice. Everyone else will shut down. I'll get what I want and we can move on. So yeah, it can definitely have negative repercussions if we go overboard.
As someone who doesn't, so Christopher, taking this, I'm curious, you have a company, you have clients, you have a wife, you have children. Hearing this conversation as from a reflective place, like, what do you notice you could change about, right? I'm just relating to you have more going on and more important things than me. So where do you notice, like, hey, from this, like, where could you, like, point urgency and where could you go, you know what, I need to, like, not put hot sauce all over that. It burns. Well,
So first of all, let me just address the more going on. I may have a lot going on day to day, but I didn't write any book like Fictional Authenticity like you did.
Thank you.
Which is available wherever fine books are sold.
Years ago. What has he done since, folks?
But you're exactly right. I think the first thing I'm getting is that I do this thing. Like, when Brandon was talking about it, I'm like, oh, what kind of silly leader would put hot sauce on everything? But I really get, oh my gosh, I'm trying to create urgency or deal with other people's urgency all day long. And so it does, it feels like hot sauce all over everything. I'm talking with my friends and my friends are being diagnosed with things like adrenal burnout and stuff that implies that they've been, you know, living in a heightened state of anxiety over time. And I think that as a society, we have that. You know, I can't tell how many people are trying to do something about, forgive me for going topical, but the Ukraine situation right now. People want to do something. They're contributing, they're collecting, they're donating, like that. And here's something where urgency really matters. And then there's, you know, my kid picking up their socks, which feels urgent, but isn't. So I think the first thing I'm taking is everything's not urgent. You know, there are sort of gradations, and I've been treating most things like they're urgent. Yeah. Am I picking up what you're laying down, Brandon?
Oh, amen, brother. So I think of the Stephen Covey matrix, and also known as the Eisenhower matrix. It's urgent versus important. And the goal is you're trying to, you know, identify the urgent and important stuff. Those are crises. And then go to the important but not urgent stuff, which is things like culture and strategy, which are super important. And then avoid the stuff that is, whether it's urgent or not, it's not important. But we tend to put everything into the urgent and important bucket. Pick up your socks becomes just as urgent and important as the client that says, you know, I got to talk to you right now because some horrible things just happened. you know, and so we just tend to put everything in the same bucket. So I do think there's some discernment we can be doing around this. So a few places I want to go in. So let's talk about how we manage other people's urgency a little bit. And then I want to talk about how we build trust, because it ties into some things we've talked about around emotions. We'll love to get Alex's thoughts around this, given the title of your book, Fictional Authenticity. Is that right?
This it is.
I think you're gonna like my trust formula, but I really would love to get your reactions to it, frankly. So let's talk about how we manage other people's urgency. So I'll start with how you create the right amount of urgency. So I can't take credit for this. I tell the story in the book. I had a client several years ago, small business owner, and I told him this analogy of hot sauce. And he's an anxious guy by just by personality. And so everyone's saying, we like the guy, but he's just making everything urgent all the time. But we're burning out. So he goes on his own to the grocery store. He buys 3 bottles of hot sauce. He sticks them on his desk. 1, 2, 3. And whenever there was a new project or initiative that was urgent, he would hand the owner of that initiative, he'd hand them a bottle of hot sauce and say, okay, you've got to hold on to this bottle of hot sauce. It stays on your desk until the project is done. And then you give it back to me, symbolizing this thing's urgent. Okay. I loved his example for 2 reasons. First, wouldn't it be great if we could visually actually see all the hot sauce bottles on people's desks? So then if I go over to Alex, I'm like, hey, Alex, I got this urgent thing. And I go over to his desk. I go over to your desk, Alex, and there's like 50 bottles of hot sauce. I'd be like, you know what? I'll give it to somebody else. I think you've got plenty. But we can't see people's hot sauce. But this way, you could. But the most powerful thing, he only had 3 bottles. He could only make 3 things urgent at one time. So he had to really think about, is this worthy of one of my bottles? Because I only got 3. And once they're gone, they're gone. And wouldn't it be great if more leaders had kind of a forcing mechanism like that versus, you know, infinite number of hot sauce bottles? So I think that's one. We can control how we create urgency by creating mechanisms for us. The second thing is, you know, Christopher, you mentioned this. You're dealing with other people's urgency all the time. They're just, people are quick to put their urgency on you, right? And so when they do that, don't naturally assume that it truly is urgent or is your problem or issue. So I think healthy reprioritization and prioritization conversations is what all of us can do a better job of. So when someone drops you a big urgent thing, I get it all the time. Clients say, oh, I need da 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 da. I always respond, when's the latest you need this by? And sometimes something I think is due tomorrow, they'll say, oh, we got 3 weeks. Fantastic. I can get it done over the weekend sometime. I don't have to worry about it right now. Or you might just say, well, can I get it to you by this? You make it a negotiation. I can't do this now, but I can do this later. Often in workplaces, it can be a negotiation between 2 other leaders that you have to facilitate. So I'll tell you a great story. Years ago, when I was teaching MBA students more actively, I had an MBA student. She'd gone and done an internship in investment banking in New York City. So she had a couple different managing directors that she was working with. One of them gives her a big project. She's excited. She's working on it. The next day, another one comes by her desk and says, hey, I've got this other big project I want to give you. And she said, I'm happy to do this. I'm thrilled to help you. But would you like to be the one to tell Scott that I'm not doing his project any longer? Or do you want me to tell Scott that I'm not doing his project any longer? And she said, he kind of looked at her for a minute. And he said, never mind. And he walked away, took it to somebody else. So sometimes we also need to kind of broker those negotiations amongst other leaders. Because if you stick with my analogy that everyone's got 3 bottles of hot sauce, what's to stop leaders from giving all their bottles to you if you're a little further down in the food chain and you've got 15 bottles? So don't just take it, broker it based on your capacity. So those are just a few thoughts around how we manage urgency, whether we're the leader or others. So let me pause there and let you gentlemen react to that. And then I want to share with you my trust formula and get Alex's thoughts on authenticity in the formula.
Tired of presentations with no impact, no inspiration, and no traction? Do dull speakers have you and your team disengaged and distracted by smartphones? Christopher McCullough brings energy, insights, and 2 decades of experience delivered with punch, humor, and heart. Your team will leave energized, uplifted, and with a sense of purpose. Visit ChristopherMcCullough.com to bring some heat to your next speaking engagement. MCAULIFFE. ChristopherMcCullough.com.
Are you seeking to change your career to something that is both fulfilling and challenging? Do you want to help people reach their full potential and strive to achieve their dreams? Would you like to inspire those around you and help create a better world? If you're serious about a career change or just want to explore the craft of personal coaching, contact Accomplishment Coaching. With locations across the country in Washington, D.C., Seattle, Chicago, New York City, and San Diego, Accomplishment Coaching is the leading institution in personal coaching. Our staff carefully monitors the entire program live during the training process and have met the strict standards of ICF International to achieve accreditation. Through a focus on quality instruction rather than endless modules of training, Accomplishment Coaching will guide you from your very first step all the way to becoming one of the finest coaches in the world. Visit AccomplishmentCoaching.com to learn more. Accomplishment Coaching, where coaches lead and leaders coach.
Christopher McAuliffe is your source for the latest in the world of personal coaching. Whether it be speaking with such luminaries as Deepak Chopra or getting the newest techniques and innovation, The Coaching Show is always on the cutting edge of what's happening now.
The Coaching Show is brought to you by Accomplishment Coaching, home of the world's finest coach training program. Here is Christopher McAuliffe, Master Certified Coach.
What do you got, Alex? You got, okay.
I love that. Alex just points to Christopher. Okay, it's you.
I love what you're saying. I particularly love the bottles of hot sauce and the asking people, because, you know, recently, of course, I've gotten a lot of urgent requests, and to let people know a time frame has been my thing. Like, I could probably get back to you by the end of the week. Does that work? And I've been surprised by how many people say, sure, that's fine, right? Because I relate to it like, well, you asked me today, you're probably expecting an answer today. But so I love this, turning it to them and asking them what the latest is you need. I feel like that. I feel like the question that I've got is, sometimes I do lack of urgency, and I notice that I'll go to like heartfelt connection to try and get something done or to make a request. Right. Recently, there's something that's pretty important in my business, and I went out and I just asked people like, hey, I need this. Are you willing? Are you able? Can you, you know, do this? Can you provide this? And I got an equal amount of, oh my gosh, thanks for bringing your heartfelt, you know, authenticity. I'm happy to support. And other people who were like, that's some weak stuff, man. What are you doing? Right. So I don't know if you have anything about that piece or coming from kind of a different place on purpose, even though it's urgent, not coming from the, you know, hair pulling, things are on fire place, but more just like a heartfelt thing. Or are we just talking tactics here?
So I'm ties in the trust formula. I do want to share it with you, but I'll also say this. There's two kinds of urgency we can create in the world. First is the obvious one, worst case scenario. Like, if I don't get this from you, I'm going to die. So can you please send it back to me? Right. So this kind of worst case scenario that tends to motivate people the most. But the other kind of urgency is opportunity scenario, which you might say, you know, if you make these changes or moves, I could see you ready for this promotion by the end of the year. But if you don't make these changes, that position's going to be open. We're going to have to put somebody else in that role. Right? Or if we make all these moves and enter into a new market, we can, you know, completely transform our business. But our competitors are onto the same idea. And if we don't get going, they're going to eat our lunch before we get there. So you can use opportunity scenario. Depending upon the person's personality or the function they sit in, one can be more important than another. So for example, years ago, I did some work at an association conference for loss prevention leaders in the retail space. So these are the folks that they try and lock down stores so stuff can't be stolen, right? All they think about all day long is bad guys. Bad guys and what the bad guys are gonna do, right? They don't care about opportunity scenario. Could care less. They're only motivated by scary stuff. So I got to talk about, if they don't make a move, why bad stuff's going to happen. Flip to other retail audiences I've worked with, you know, more luxury retailers that are more sales focused, right? If you're in sales, you don't want to talk about scary stuff. You want to talk about making more sales. So opportunity scenario is all they want to talk about. So knowing your audience, it might be a matter. So when Christopher, when you were talking, I made me think about almost like opportunity scenario. Like, it was a little bit of a plea for positivity. And some people said, oh, this is beautiful. Other people said, there's monsters. There's scary things going on. This isn't scary. I don't need to do this right now. So it could just be a matter of personalities that Some clicked with that approach, some didn't. Now, if you're not sure what to do, mix the two. Say, if we don't make a change, we're all going to die. But if we make this change, there's a new promised land waiting for us right around the corner. And sometimes you can combine the two, and it can work out, and you can hit both audiences. So that was my first reaction to you. Maybe that was what was going on.
This reminds me too of like, which we haven't touched on, is what kind of culture do you also want to create that's mixed in here? I don't know if either one of you, I just started watching that new series on Magic Johnson and the Lakers.
Yeah.
On HBO Max. I did a little research to like, how realistic is this? And one of the things, it was like, hey, they just took everybody and like made them more extreme for TV, right? For to the drama. But one of the things that I noticed was, you know, the Jerry Buss character was very like, I want this to be fun and this experience and everyone to have a good time. And Jerry West's character, who was the coach at the time, was just angry about everything. Now, both obviously very successful people. And when I was playing around, one of the things I found was like Jerry West was never actually a happy guy. Now he suffers from depression and all these things. I never knew this about him. And I think about like those, there's a team out there that would want a Jerry West style leadership, right? That would want like just yelling, right? Almost like the old school Bobby Knight, Indiana, yelling, screaming, beating down on the players. And they would want, that's urgency all the time, right? Hot sauce on everything. And then there was the Jerry Buss, who was like more like is sparingly putting hot sauce, right? He really wanted Magic Johnson. So there's urgency there. But even in that, the hot sauce has a sweetness to it. And I hear, Christopher, when I was listening to you, I was thinking, it's like, what's the culture that you want to create? Not just about, like, there's that extra level, right? How does urgency work inside of the culture that we want to build?
Yeah. When I heard you talk, it sounds like just that the chef and cooking analogy comes to mind for me, because you used a lot of those words. Maybe that's right. Maybe it's just a balance of sweet and spicy. Maybe it's finding that now. It's easier said than done, right? You can overdo it. But for whatever reason, maybe somehow that combination worked. That if you had two Jerry Wests, there's no way that would have resulted in the same outcome. You needed that spicy and that sweet. So maybe that's a good takeaway for us as leaders. You know, we being able to say, I'm really proud of you and I'm so proud of the accomplishments we've done. But then also be able to add urgency when necessary. Also applies at home. You know, being able to give our kiddos big hugs and say, I love you and I really like you and you're such an amazing person. And this is the fifth time I've asked you to clean your room. So, you know, maybe there's something there. But Christopher, I know you were about to add something.
I was, and this could take us down a bad place or a rabbit hole. So I'm willing to abandon it. But I was thinking about Zelensky. So here's a guy who's actually experiencing urgency beyond what hopefully any of us will ever experience, right? Where bombs are dropping and he's being invaded. And I love what you said about the opportunity scenario versus worst case scenario, because I think when he spoke to individual leaders of countries, I should say, and he asked for support, my understanding is he spoke to the opportunity. Hey, this is the gateway to Europe. This is the gateway to democracy, right? This is something, and he spoke in high, broad terms of humanity and the way the world would go, geopolitics, right? Yeah. Yep. When he spoke to the Parliament, the House of Lords, and the Congress, he spoke of worst case scenario. You know what this is like. Bombs are dropping moment by moment. People are getting killed right now. You know, you've had attacks on Pearl Harbor. You've had the Blitz of London, right? And spoke to that. Am I picking up the right notes here? Is this what is happening?
Yeah, it's actually a great segue into the trust formula, which I wanted to share, because when we create urgency, create anxiety, there has to be a level of trust. You can't just walk in on day one and do this, because people are going to say, who's this guy or gal? Like, they're making me feel really uncomfortable. I don't even know them or trust them. So this is a trust formula that I came up with when I was teaching MBA students almost 15 years ago. So, all right. So Alex, I really want your thoughts on this. All right. So here it is. Trust is credibility. Okay. Multiply times. And then in parentheses, you got to put on your math hat on this. Okay. In parentheses, it's authenticity plus vulnerability. Okay, so credibility, multiplied times, and then in parentheses, authenticity plus vulnerability. So the sum of authenticity plus vulnerability. And the reason why it's a multiplication formula, which took me a while to refine, is because if either side of that equation goes to zero, trust goes to zero. Multiply anything by zero, you get zero. So if credibility goes to zero, it doesn't matter how authentic and vulnerable you are. People aren't going to trust you. Like, I've got relatives right now in my life, extended family, super authentic and vulnerable with us. They do not have a key to my house. And many of them don't know where I live. And I like it that way. Okay. Their craziness in their life, they should not know where I live. Okay. And then on the other hand, you can come up with all the credibility in the world, but if you don't show up as authentic and vulnerable, you're also not going to have trust. Now, if we think about Zelensky, the way he's shown up has been such a model of authenticity and vulnerability, right? He's always wearing a t-shirt. He always looks like he's just kind of with, like, in the fray with everybody else. And also with credibility, he's literally in the fray. He's going into your war zones. And so there's this like sense that he's not this distant bureaucrat that's sitting in some protected, isolated place. I mean, he may be, but that's not the experience we have with him. So when he talks, you say, yeah, I see what the guy's doing. I trust this guy. And so then when he starts to add on the hot sauce on top of that, we say, yeah, I want to help this guy. I mean, look, compelling reason. I trust him. Let's go. So there's, I think both those are important. Now, that's my perspective, but I've got this expert right here about authenticity. So tell me a little bit about your book and how it might play or not play in the formula that I offered. Alex.
Well, I love the equation. I wrote it down. I'm staring at it and I'm trying to, and so this is where I first went is the book really is about that people think they're authentic, but they actually have no idea who they are. That most of us, most of the time, unless we've done therapy, coaching, transformational programs, we really have never peeled off the layers of why we believe what we believe, why we think what we think. We are just an output of the media, our parents are, but yet we think that is who we are. One of the things that I developed is that I don't think anyone even knows what authenticity means, because we don't know what is authentic. So we don't know what authenticity means. So I believe, and this is where I think the only gap, this is where I see a gap, because I think we know what vulnerability means. I think most of us understand like that's to be essentially exposed or, to not have defenses up. And I think we know what credible means, credibility. I think authenticity though, is a five-tiered. It's integrity, commitment, vulnerability, trust, and faith. And that built in that order. You have to, for you to be authentic, you'd have to have integrity to say like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I believe. This is who I am. And stick to that. Believe that, speak it, think it. You'd have to be committed to that and being integrity in those beliefs. You'd have to be vulnerable to actually put yourself out there and expose yourself like that. And then you'd have to trust that this choice, right? Because I would say that just choosing who we are is actually a choice. It's not anything else. And then faith in that there's something bigger that allows you to be that and play that part. Now, so I think if I take that and I input that into your right equation, well, it gets a little weird because we have vulnerability twice. But we could take the same thing and say, hey, we just put in the bracket all those things. And if any of those go to zero, but that's the only thing. I think it's great. I think I'm
glad I asked you. I think that's a great, great perspective, because I think you remind us that authenticity is, we can kid ourselves into believing that we're authentic. So there's a true self-awareness and work you have to do around that to understand what factors have contributed to how you are. And then I always try and pick my favorite word of the year. I'm keeping my word from 2021 for 2022 because I love it so much. And my word is agency. And I love the word agency because I think it plays into what you said, because then there's agency about, okay, so who do I want to be? And I'm going to walk that way in the world. Right. And I have the sense of power to do that. Right. Now, it doesn't mean it's not scary and there's vulnerability, but vulnerability and faith are always byproducts of agency. So I think we're speaking the same language, my friend. I love
the old piece too that I just got is, it's also all this is shifting, right? That who we are is constantly evolving, right? In any moment, any of us could say, right, Christopher could suddenly decide I'm a t-shirt guy. And all of us would have said, probably trust him a lot more, right? Right now he's just
just think, Christopher, your trust can go up if we just start wearing gray t-shirts.
I've been talking to Christopher about this for years. He's been trying to get me into nicer clothes. I've been trying to, you know, make him more accessible to the common man.
I didn't see it before, Alex, but I get now that V-neck is for short for vulnerability. I get that. Thank you so much.
It's a little closer to the heart. It's a little exposed.
Wow.
But I think, right, that who we are is fluid, which is so not a we. Because of a fear of vulnerability, we put a stake in the ground of this is who I am so often, right? Not all of us. And then we like have to really like keep defending that belief when, hey, that might be great if it's working for you and it might not be. And if we extend this to companies or urgency, it's really nice to know that you are fluid and that all of this can be adapted and changed based on, is it serving you or not serving you or your company? Or your family.
I love what you're saying. We can't handle that, my friend. We can't handle that level of unpredictability, fluidity. It creates way too much anxiety for us. Think about how many COVID religions have popped up over the last 2 years, where people have their own belief about how COVID worked, how you're supposed to operate, who's going to hell and who's going to heaven. Okay. And none of it was based on science. None of it was based on facts, but it made people feel comfortable because they had a certainty around it. They had to have that certainty, okay? And we're still seeing that as a fluid thing. COVID is a fluid thing. It's still evolving as we're getting more data. Scientists are looking over that and making new assessments and constantly debunking all these other religions, but people don't want to let go of their religions because it created certainty. So I love what you're saying, but it is very, very hard for us as human beings to live that way. But to your point, think about how the last 2 years have changed all of us. We've all been put into new contexts. We all have new reflections on what matters to us. I've realized I'm no longer going to battle Atlanta traffic. Not as bad as LA, but it's pretty bad. I'm not going to battle that 5 days a week like I did before. My health really suffered, and my health is in the best shape it's been in a long time, and I want to keep it that way. That would have happened had I not had that experience. So I think you're exactly right. I just think it's hard for us as human beings to have that level of uncertainty. It just creates anxiety for us.
Well, I think something that I learned really from Christopher is, and I'll use like the term gradient, which I would have never used before, right? I think that I've really noticed in my relationships with the gradient in which I play with people, I want to be high, right? I'm not actually interested in low kind of gradient relationships. Surface level, even in, you know, when I've had challenges recently with people and I'll share something and then, you know, and the conversation devolves quickly into like a versus conversation versus trying to get somewhere together. I'm seeing it happen in my head and I'm like, oh, I'm just at a different place, not better or worse, right? This isn't not like I'm a better person. I've just spent so much time working on myself and learning and growing. And I want to say expanding, because growing makes it feel like better or worse, but expanding, that I'm having a conversation simply on a different level, like a different energetic level, or I'm showing up on a different energetic level, or my beliefs are that I think I really, part of authenticity, right, is to know that, hey, I'm actually not for the common person who can't be with, who needs certainty. Right. If you need certainty, I'm actually not your guy. Yeah. I'm the guy for people who are like, screw certainty. Like, let's get out there and make messes and have fun and live like this wild life. I think having gone through Christopher's training program at Accomplishment Coaching, there's a like that level like cracks people open a lot more to that. Like, people get to come in and feel a little safer and held. Christopher, I don't know how you like, if you would agree with this. But it's a lower gradient of a conversation because it's more of a starting point for a lot of people.
So I think that's great. You, what I'm hearing you say is you've done a lot of hard work. It's changed the values that are important to you. It's really important for you to have relationships with other people that share similar values and are at the same journey you're on. I think that's healthy. And I will say, just me personally, I've been really going through a reflection period of my relationships, inventory of all my relationships. And I'm saying, what relationships have really been valuable to me, added value to me? How do I continue to reinvest those? Have there been relationships in my life which have not been adding value and actually detracting from me? And how do I minimize my involvement in those? And that's been hard because some of those relationships are family, frankly. But that's part of that challenge and journey. So, I think we're just saying all the same things. And, you know, living a life that's truly authentic has some of those hard tasks and hard work that we need to do, but it can be worthy for us. Christopher, I Alex gave a tremendous shout out to your work. I would love for you to just add a little more color to that.
Thanks. I'm gobsmacked by the opportunity. I think that you pointed to your favorite word, agency, right? And I think we would agree that all self-improvement, self-awareness work starts with owning ourselves. And, you know, what Sir John Whitmore talked about as self-responsibility, right? You know, and what you're referring to as agency. I think that the opportunity that you provide us of recognizing urgency as something that is optional, and us opening our hearts and being more willing to be vulnerable and authentic. I know that you suggested, Alex, that authenticity, we don't know what it is, but the more that we are truly ourselves and allow ourselves to be witnessed and supported and cared about, the better the world is, because we're dealing with our actual stuff instead of our representative stuff, you know, who we think other people need us to be. And in that world, we're more likely to get our needs met, they're more likely to get our relationships right, even if it means not seeing those people. You know, it's more of a rightness to our lives, and more able to bring out our natural affinity for each other and ourselves and life, right? We talk about love a lot, but man, to bring it into the boardroom and our relationships and everywhere, that natural affinity that exists among and between people is, to me, everything. Sorry if that was too much color, but thanks for the opportunity.
No, I love that. I love that. You know, I think about the goal is, it'd be great if we could walk it with the spirit of loving everyone that we're in touch with, everyone we come in contact with. That said, some people we can love from a really close distance. Some people it's more like a Christmas card. And knowing who's in what category, right? I'll just send them a card once a month, once a year, tell them nice things. I don't need to have a reaction from them. In fact, I'd really rather not, but I'm showing them love, because it's not a healthy relationship if we get too close. Others are close. So I think that's part of the life journey for us too, is where are people in our closeness, so we can still maintain love for them and that healthy distance.
It sounds like such a beautiful note for us to end our talk on, that I'm kind of tempted to leave it here. Although, man, I have so many more things I want to talk to you about. Would you consider coming back and we can talk about things like other people's urgency as opposed to my urgency?
Amen. I would love to. It'd be fun.
It's really been great being with you. I want to give you the opportunity for the last word here today. We've talked about so many things far and wide, including a beautiful trust formula that I'm taking with me and going to give you full credit for all the time I talk about it. Is there something, a parting thought or a parting shot you'd like to leave our listeners and or viewers with today?
You know, I'm going to try and loop it all together. We talked about a lot of things today. We opened with emotions. I'm going to end with emotions. I think a good starting place for you, for everyone listening, is use your emotions as a good source of data. Do you feel anxious all the time? Well, if so, why? Explore that a little bit. Is it because other people are putting so much urgency on you and it's creating burnout? Are you putting it on yourself? Where's that coming from? And how might you manage that a little bit more? So I think if we go back to our original starting place around emotions, use that as the start to self-assess where you are on the urgency continuum and how you might, you know, dial up the hot sauce or dial it back.
Beautiful. What a perfect bookend. Thank you very much. Alex, any last thoughts for you? Anything you
I'm going to be really, maybe too honest right now. When I read Brandon's bio, I came in here and I was like, ooh, I'm going to get this guy. I'm going to, I was like, urgency. No, this is bad. We don't need more of this. And it's, I just had such a different experience of who you are and what you brought and the way that you shared it, which I love because it was just so eye-opening. And I feel like I learned a lot. And I really, I'm also love to be reminded that, hey, like what you think, what we think on the surface or the little pieces that we get, right? Christopher read your bio and may have thought completely different things that I did. So it's not like your bio, it's right how I read it and how I interpreted it. But it's really nice to show up and be like pleasantly surprised with somebody and what they bring. Thanks for that.
Thank you. I'm glad you had that experience.
That would be, we didn't even do the basics. Oh, what a knucklehead I am. People want to know how to reach Brandon and find out more about his work. You can go to theworkplacetherapist.com, theworkplacetherapist.com. Any other places that people should look for you or your book? The book, of course, is The Hot Sauce Principle, How to Live and Lead in a World Where Everything is Urgent All the Time.
Yeah, so Amazon's an easy place to find the book. I'm releasing the Audible version of the book in the next month or so, so they'll be able to get it that way. But if you just Google workplace therapist, I'm actually the only one. So it's a really easy way to find me that way too.
Wonderful. And also available on bookshop.org for those people who have an opinion about Amazon. Okay. Really great to be with you, Brandon. Thank you so much. Alex Terranova, people can find you at on the Instagram. I understand it's very popular at Inspirational Alex or at thedreammason.com. Your book is Fictional Authenticity. And my name is Christopher McAuliffe. We want to shout out our longtime sponsor of this program, Accomplishment Coaching, home of the world's finest coach training program, whose newest tagline I resonate with, which is transformation, really. Thank you, dear listener, for being with us. We will talk to you again next week.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening to The Coaching Show. We will talk to you next week.